give a warm welcome to Jason. Floor is all yours.
All right, let's see if this is working. Can everybody hear me? Great. So that was warm. Thank you. That was a very warm welcome. I appreciate that. This is one of the warmest conference rooms, actually, I've been to in the good sense, not the heated kind. There's something nice about this place, so it's good. At any rate, I wanted to talk to you about search and social. I have been purely in the search game for about 12 years. I've only recently started to get into social. So it's been really an interesting education. And I think that there has been a move to combine search and social in agencies and with clients and brands. And a lot of it is because there's this idea that there's a lot of similarity and things are becoming biddable and there are things that are happening that they're converging. I actually disagree with that. I think that we're not there yet. I don't think we have tools that combine those things properly. It still requires specialists who really know this stuff very deeply. And so I think that we're ahead of the game a little bit, right? I think we're doing it, and it's primarily an economic decision, and that's almost never the right thing to do. But that doesn't mean to say, though, that there aren't some real connections with social and search. And it really comes down to the fact that we're all trying to reach, you know, the same consumers, right? So they're all on a consumer journey and we are passing them back and forth. And if we can learn from those interactions, then we can hopefully provide them with better advertising experience, better performance for us, and so on. So what we found I want to show you two stories of where we have combined social data and search data to have a complementary picture of the consumer so that we can actually find something new and then execute on it. Oh, there's me. That's sort of duplicative. I don't think you need to see that again. So this is the way I like to think about social and search. So there is a version of ourselves that is the version that we would really like to be, and the one that we present to others. So, like, I remember when Netflix was first coming into being, I would get the discs in the mail, and it was fantastic, and I'd get my three discs. And I'd probably get something like Citizen Kane and Nosferatu, and then something like Step Brothers. 20 minutes later, I'd watch Step Brothers. It would go back in the mail, and the other two would sit there and not be watched, right? And then I would just keep replacing the one, so it was like this ever-going thing. So I really wanted to watch this, and this is what I would tell you that I wanted to watch, but what I would actually do is this, right? And I think that's probably familiar to you all. You know, we aspire to be something maybe a little bit better than what we are, which is a good thing. So I see a corollary there between social media and search. So we as people, our social personas they're reflective of more of an aspirational version of ourselves, right? We don't share the pictures of ourselves looking terrible or yelling at our kids. I think about the pictures that I have in Facebook of me and my family, and then I think about what that day actually looked like. And there's a vast difference between those two things. But it doesn't matter, because that's what I share, right? So that's sort of the best version of myself, and it's an aspirational version of ourselves. In search, we're not trying to prove anything to anybody, right? We're only doing the things that we actually need to do or want to do. So I think of this as sort of our transactional self, right? So this is where we're doing the things that need to be done. We're not trying to show off or say that we're anything more than we are. No one's watching. And we don't have time for it, and we need something, so we search for it, and we click through. Now, if there's any dispute about this, I would say, would you rather someone see your Facebook feed or your search history? Yeah, and you're just like thinking, oh, my search history, I wouldn't want anyone to see it. I'm sure everybody in this room would have perfect search history, and it would all be, you know, very nice. But you get the point. So the thing, though, is that these are both us, right? We're not one or the other. We are both of these things. And the hope is that if we can, as marketers, think about these two selves, how can we make our transactional self align with our aspirational self? How can we use insights from what we want to be to help connect when someone does the things that they maybe have to do. There are things in each area that we can use that are really complementary of each other, right? So when we think about social media, there's sentiment. You know, that's something we've been doing for years where you look like, how are people talking about your brand? How are they feeling about it? Are they happy with it? Are they not happy with it? What particularly are they happy with about? You know, top topics, obviously it's very, you know, what's going on in the moment. How many people are talking and how much are they talking? So conversation volume. And then the trends, how much were they talking about a week ago versus now? And then hashtag and image trends, which are very handy for sort of tracking all this stuff happening. In search, we can see how many people are searching or how many searches are happening. What type of related topics are happening? We can look at correlations between different searches. We can look at how people are searching and how that's changed. How are they searching based on device? Are they using tablets or mobile or laptops? When are they doing it? What day of the week are they doing it? What week of the month and what month of the year? All of these things are really great in search. And brand loyalty. We can look at search data and know that people are growing disenchanted with your brand or they're just searching for it less for some reason. I worked with a brand that acquired someone that was a beloved brand, and you could see the searches for that beloved brand. Once they bought it, the searches kind of stayed, even though the brand no longer existed. The less beloved brand sort of cannibalized some of those searches, but not that much. And then they made an announcement that everybody hate, and then the search just fell down completely. You could just see the entire story of the collapse of this merger, just in the search data, just like looking at that one thing, it told the entire story. So there's some really interesting nuggets in both of these things. And when you combine them together, they become more than just interesting. They hopefully become actionable and unique at times. So by combining these insights, we can spot the trends that are actually resulting in changed behaviors, which helps us make the connections across that consumer journey, whether we're a transactional or aspirational version of ourselves. So I wanted to tell you a story about New Orleans. It's always great to do a case study with New Orleans because in your head, you're already in New Orleans, right? You know, you just think about it, and if you've been there, you're enjoying it or maybe regretting it. And or if you haven't been there, you have an image in your mind of what it would be like. And that's kind of the issue with New Orleans because we have a perception of it. And what we wanted to do is to sort of expand people's thinking about what New Orleans can be, because there's more to New Orleans than just one little area of the city and with just a narrow set of, shall we say, behaviors that you can engage in at New Orleans. So we had to help them grow by 2018, and we did it by discovering a different way to drive destination consideration. Consideration is one of those areas where a lot of people don't really spend a lot of time. We do awareness and we do the conversion, and then we kind of let people find their way through the middle because it's hard to measure and can sometimes, you know, no one's really sure who owns that ball. So we put together a consumer journey. It's not important for you to see all this stuff, but basically it's just looking at, like, just completely not knowing anything about it through the spark and so on to visiting New Orleans and then sharing about the experience. But of particular note, as we thought about it, people would think about New Orleans as a place to visit, but they weren't really finding that reason to go, right? They knew all the things that we know about New Orleans, but that really wasn't enough, and it wasn't good enough for a lot of occasions, right? So if you wanted to go to New Orleans for the specific reason of going to, you know, drink at, you know, Pat O'Brien's and all that kind of stuff, or go to Mardi Gras and all that, we've got you. But it's those other things that people couldn't quite wrap their heads around. So when they're thinking about their vacation, they're like, oh, New Orleans. And they start to think, they look into it and say, well, actually, you know, as I think about it, it's more specific than what I want to do. So we looked at the way people were talking about New Orleans to see, you know, what is going on in conversation that might give us a hint about ways that we might be able to connect New Orleans with some other things. And we absolutely saw things, Bourbon Street, Jazz Fest, Southern Decadence, all this sort of stuff that you would expect. But we did see a long tail conversation that sort of made us interested. What we saw was, in addition to all these things, as we broke it out and looked at the long tail conversation, where, you know, fewer people were talking about it, but just as passionately, were the things like the parks and concerts and history, the plantations and all of these things. So there was this wider world of New Orleans. So what we thought about was that you know, this exists, it's just not being brought to the surface. So if we can do that, maybe there's something there. We created subsegments, which we call tribes, but basically they're just, you know, more niche segments that are based on these types of insights that, hey, you know, there are people who are interested in the architecture. People who are interested in things like Tech Week. You know, New Orleans isn't necessarily associated with that, but there are people that would connect with a lot. So as you see, it's just a much wider range of consumers and thinking about ways that we can truly differentiate them so that we can then speak to them. And we also, it's not perfectly pictured here, but when we looked at the search data, it confirmed a lot of these things that we had, a lot of these assumptions that we had. There were searches around these topics. It also allowed us to see how far away people would go, you know, how far away people could be and still consider New Orleans, right? So we looked at that data in the search data, and we could see very clear geographic patterns, and they weren't necessarily the ones you would expect. They were a little bit farther, they're a little bit farther west. There were gaps where you wouldn't expect. So as we looked at that data, that was really helpful to see, because ultimately we can have the best message in the world, but if people aren't receptive to it, it's not going to really help us very much. So when we looked at the long tail conversations, we looked at the search history, we looked at all these things, we put together a campaign that spoke to a much bigger, broader picture of New Orleans to a broader base of people, but not just scattering it to everybody. We were targeted about where and when and how we talked to people based on the insights that we had in search and social. And two arrows happened. Flights to NOLA were up by 7.1% after the first year, and spending on lodging grew 8%. Now, obviously, it wasn't just because of this, but it was a main part of the campaign that was put together to celebrate NOLA. And the campaign that was created was called Follow Your NOLA, and it was a very customized kind of like this bigger picture of New Orleans there, where people can check and see themselves in the New Orleans that maybe they hadn't considered before. NOLA was the fastest growing city that year when we first kicked this off. And it was a part of a larger trend that we're doing and a lot of other media that we're doing. But at the foundation of it was this work that we had done. We understood the consumers. We listened to what they were saying. We were looking how they were searching. And it allowed us to build the foundation of a campaign that's now going in year 3, I believe, to celebrate their tricentennial. So that's going to be the basis of what we're doing with New Orleans this year. So it's been this ongoing campaign based on these very fundamental observations that we derived looking at social data and search data that even the people in New Orleans, they just weren't aware of this. They weren't looking in the right place. It was all buried in the data. It just wasn't, they just didn't know where to look. And really, it was a combination of the two that made it more meaningful. One or the other wasn't enough. Putting it together was persuasive, and it worked. So the next story. I should follow up New Orleans with minivans, I think, because that's a good palate cleanser. And definitely close with the minivans, I think, because you don't want to close with New Orleans, because it's a much, much more fascinating topic. But at any rate, we are working with an auto aggregator site. I can't tell you the name of them, unfortunately, but basically they collect a bunch of information about cars, and consumers use them to make good decisions on cars. So they are primarily interested in driving traffic, but that was something that we kept pushing them for. It's like, not all traffic is the same. We want to drive better visitors to your site, more qualified leads. And so to do that, we wanted to identify patterns in search that would drive action in social. Because we were pretty much maxed out in search. We wanted to create new customers, and we wanted to create people who were coming to the website from search so we could build new audiences that we could target in search and beyond. So the idea is that we wanted to get to know this audience, and really what we wanted to get to, and this is probably true for all marketing, but we get from this generic idea of who our audience is, and we start to add layers of information bit by bit by bit until you realize, well, you know what, this wasn't a customer or a group, it was two groups, but actually when I really deep down look, I can see that there's four groups, and they're meaningfully differentiated, and they're big enough that I can reach them. I know that one-on-one targeting or one-to-one targeting is our goal in a way, but ultimately they have to be big enough, right? So when we did the tribes for New Orleans, for instance, it wasn't this size of a room. It was significant enough that it made sense for us to target them and that they could drive change. But the point is that you want to get to the level of knowledge and clarity of your consumers enough to where you can reach them and be meaningful with them. And so to do that, there are tools like Simmons, looking at content, mindset. But then as you start to get into the social world of listening and then search, that's where you really start to add some specific things to these much more generic types of tools. And if you've used these, they're great, right? They give you a great starting point. But if you add more dimensions using the data that's usually proprietary to you, then you can come up with more custom insights into your audience. So looking into all this data, and one thing that I would definitely encourage you to do is waste some time, you know, look at the data and stare off into space and you know, because things like that happen, you know. Great things are discovered while riding on trains or taking walks. And so what we did was we tried to just sort of consume a lot of data and think about it and let it sit and ferment, I suppose. But at any rate, we came up with a hypothesis as we're looking at all this data that maybe birth rates would correlate with minivan research, because it kind of makes sense, because nobody thinks about getting a minivan until they're going to be having a child. Like, just zero people who doesn't have children are going to get a minivan. It's just not going to happen. And you don't think about it, and you probably are even in denial for the first few months of the pregnancy until you start to, like, people start talking to you about all the things you need to have, and then you realize, wow, maybe it is something I need. So we looked at the search data to see if there's going to be a correlation, and sure enough, there absolutely was a spike in click-through rate, and this time that correlated with where most pregnancies are, which is kind of a weird thing to be looking at. But what it led us to do is to say, all right, well, if this is a time where people are showing in their search behavior that they are more inclined to click, that means they're a super engaged audience, right? That means that if we can target them in social at the same time, with a message about it's actually SUVs and minivans, maybe it'll click, right? Because search, and the thing that I really want you to take back is that search is incredibly predictive of performance in other channels. So if you can get insights from search that you can apply to other channels, it usually works really well. We've built lookalike audiences on search based on their search, on what they're actually searching. We've built lookalike audiences in social, programmatic. We've even worked on, you know, helped it drive TV creative. But search is really predictive, and in fact, it really was. So the people that we targeted here, they looked at three more pages, which was basically the success metric than any other means. So these people were super engaged. They were the right target at the right time and the right part of the calendar, using this data to drive really, really good, strong engagement. So these people clicked on Facebook ads, came to the site, and looked at a lot of pages. And I can't tell you the actual numbers, but those three incremental pages, if you think about that as increasing conversion rate by 10-15%, and you're thinking about how much cars cost, this is actually pretty significant, right? So by looking at these behaviors together, and this sort of started from, let's just be curious, to what can search tell us, and then, well, gosh, that confirms our hypothesis. What can we do in social based on that? So it's not like, you know, search was the magic bullet here. It was just sort of a combination of things. But it was the thing that led us to this insight that really worked out well. And I will say that the hypothesis that cars, that minivans and pregnancies aren't necessarily, you know, that's not a crazy hypothesis, and it's not a leap of faith. But to verify it in the data, that allows you to go ahead and do this and put some money behind it. My closing thought is sort of built on that. I think that, you know, we talked about this aspirational self and our transactional self. I'm sure a lot of us would love to do more things for our clients. We'd like to be more innovative. We'd like to try out new alphas and betas. We'd like to do all of these things. But we don't get a chance to, right? We have to hit the metrics today. Like, we have to drive the revenue. We have to, you know, we have the goals that we have, and we have to hit them today. And we often don't have the luxury of waiting. But this is the type of thing that it really does make a difference, right? And if you work with a search team, if you're working in an integrated fashion, talk to the search people earlier in the process, because they will be able to give you some insights, not every time, but frequently. So I encourage you to be the marketer that you want to be. And not just the one that you say you want to be, and search can really unlock a lot of really wonderful things. So I encourage you not just to say it, but to do it. Is that? I'd love to take some of your questions. I think we have some time, a lot of time.
Yes, so we have about 20 minutes for questions, so if you just want to raise your hands, and I'll pass along the mic.
Yes, she's going to come with the mic there. Oh. So there are a number of tools. Now, first of all, if you have access to your to the account that's actually running search, especially paid search, that will give you all the data that you need. If you go into AdWords or Bing or Yahoo, if you don't, then you can use things like Google Trends, which will tell you exactly what that is, that the trend, and we use that all the time. Especially if we're coming into new business and we don't know a lot about a client, we will go into Google Trends, and again, like that's where I can tell the story of how's your brand doing. And we had a situation where a new competitor came in, put tons of money in TV, and you saw their brand searches spike and generic searches go away. So they'd almost turned themselves into the Kleenex of this industry in like 2 months. And that Google Trends told that entire story. So there's also a tool called Google Correlate, which is something that is very important to know, that it is Google Correlate, not Google Causation. But there's some interesting things. And what it does is that it looks at a certain keyword that's interesting to you, and it shows you the top keywords that correlate with that in terms of seasonality and volume and all that kind of stuff. Now, you could have something as that'll be very random, and you have to just cast those aside. But if something sort of fits your common sense and you see, wow, these are correlating, and you can kind of understand why, then that absolutely is very helpful. But the tools are out there, and it's pretty easy to get into that keyword data. The one thing that I would caution about the search data is that most of us search the same way, right? So it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is, you are going to use similar keywords. So you have to go that next level. You have to look at, you know, break it out into geos and time and all that kind of stuff, and you have to make some leaps, and that's why it is important to bring in the social data as well, because then you can start to put these things together. Because otherwise, you're going to have limited insights, because it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, if you don't want to spend a lot on a hotel, you say a cheap hotel, right? And nobody wants to say cheap hotel in their ad unless they, don't worry about their brand, So like there are these ways that we mask our identity in search. So that's where social can help there. I'll also add that the tools that are available now with DMPs and other tools, like we use a tool called M1 that we extract insights from our audience, so we get to see audience composition. And more, and like Google 360 is something that's being developed where you're gonna be able to see who the people are who are searching in a way that you never have before. So this combination of the identity of the searcher with the intent of the search becomes very, very powerful. So the tools that you're gonna get are going to be, the most powerful ones are gonna be tools like that are going to analyze the data that you have that's coming into your website, or any other way that you can collect the data. So as you aggregate that, then you can see those trends. And then what you'll find is that there are new targets that you should be focusing on, or there are new things you need to be doing to connect with the targets that you want, right? And search, again, predictive of future behavior or behavior in other channels, search is a great way to do that. Hugely, yeah. I mean, you can't extract these things, right? The more you when I first started in search, I'd say, oh, well, your performance is up 12% because I did these optimizations. And now I realize, well, no, it's really, that was part of it, but there's all this other stuff that's going on. So absolutely, we would look at the organic, the organic social strategy, the organic search, how are they doing, looking at all that data as much as we have access to it. But absolutely, we look at that. And then we look at the website, the experience, all that sort of thing, because all of those things are coloring the experience of the consumer. So if it's going to have an impact on the consumer, whether it's organic or paid, we should know about it, because that's going to help us create a better strategy, either to build on what you're doing well in organic, or to make up for it, or to create new ways to be better at organic, the types of insights that you can get from paid that you might not from organic. I think she had her hand up before.
Yes.
Looking at all these questions.
The
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So in this particular situation, you can go back to 2004 and look at search data, and that'll tell you these sort of macro trends. 2004 was a very different world, though, and so with so much in digital, we have to take anything that we see with a grain of salt. Mobile phones have just dominated search in the last couple of years, so you can't really go that far back. But if you find trends that have stayed steady all throughout, then that's something you really want to act on, right? So if you wanted to go really crazy, you could have gone back and pulled, birth rates and search data and put them on there and realized and gone deep. It was enough for us to confirm that hypothesis there, looking at a couple of years to say, this is worth a test. If you're going to put lots of money in it, I would say go as far back as possible and try to find the things that maybe don't change. One of the things that I look at whenever doing search research is the brand term itself, just because that tells you a lot, because brand health means so much. If someone has a good perception of you and a lot of people are interested in you, then that's going to color their reaction to just about everything, and it's probably going to have a halo effect. Hopefully, if it's positive, there's a halo effect around other things. So you can track how that brand term has done and just sort of see, is there a lift in interest? With the SUVs, SUVs and minivans, it's a little bit different, right? You can't get that. But generally, as a brand, you can do that. So try to find the things that are universal or unchanging to find those patterns. And that shouldn't be affected by whether we're doing on the phone or not, or whatever amazing thing we're going to be using next. Yes?
What's your perfect client?
My perfect client. So the perfect client is someone who has good data, clean data, that they share, and they work with us very collaboratively, where we are all working together to, try new things, try to get new insights, have an appetite for testing, but absolutely telling us enough about the business challenges that they had so we can recommend, useful tests. I think, one of the secret weapons of any agency should be is go walk the halls and understand what their business challenges are and what the culture is, because those are the types of things that give you the types of insights that will work. But ultimately, it's just the best client is someone who's going to be really open. Work as a partner. No one's trying to keep we're not trying to keep each other in the dark. They will accept pushback. They will work with us on timelines, but also at the same time help us prioritize what we're doing so that the timelines work with them as well. And I think that, it depends on the agency. We love innovation, and we're always trying to push things and build new things and all that kind of stuff, and we're a good match for some clients. And some clients would say, I'm more comfortable than other type. And so you want a match of sort of your who you are as a brand with who you are as an agency, and that works well together. I mean, the culture should be similar, and definitely ethically. If you're working in lockstep that way, I think that's important as well. I don't know if I have any clients in the room that I need to be careful of, but yeah, I think that's those are the best ones that I've had. Just the ones who just want to be partners. We're all the same team, And if that's the case, then a lot of other things fall into place. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what we find on our website and on our blog is searches spike when there's an outbreak.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but outbreak can't predict when the outbreak's going to happen. So, when
yep.
the outbreak happens, sometimes it's very geographic, but we find that the searches go up.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
When something like that happens. But it's hard to be prepared for that. So,
yeah.
Is there any tips that you can give me?
Yeah, I would look. Historically, what those spikes are around, they're probably going to be similar things. You just don't know when they're going to happen. So, you know, there's a balance that you want to find between planning and flexibility. And what we talk a little bit about is planned flexibility, right? So, you know, so we build things. But if you know that at some point, you know, certain illnesses or whatever it is are going to spike, you just don't know when, build great content that deals with that. And just know it's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It might not happen at all this year. But you'll be glad when you do, especially if you make the right bets on what those things are going to be. I would also say that in social, you know, if you're looking at social and search for these types of trends, they're both really great for it. I mean, social is so real-time, though, so, like, if you put those two together, it might be able to help you predict that this is happening or vice versa, and you can capture it in social where you might have the ability to react a little more quickly. With vaccines and things like that, you know, it's a tricky in paid search. And doing anything quickly in organic search is basically impossible. That's why you have to build that credibility throughout the year. But you can be right there in social for sure, as long as you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 Definitely. And you know, one of the things you can also do in search is you pre-program these things, and they just have triggers. So once a certain thing happens, it goes live. Like, we've done things where if cancellations of airlines reach a certain threshold, we launch ads for a hotel at that airport. So, like, if the flu is happening in Dallas, but it's not happening in Wisconsin, then you don't need to bother with Wisconsin. You're just in Dallas, and you can follow it where it is. But you've done all the pre-work beforehand. You're just letting the data tell you when to automatically make these things go live.
So how does the trigger work?
Yeah, you have an API. There's lots of data that's out there. I'm sure there's flu trackers. There's all sorts of things like that. We just use FlightAware, which tells you when your flights are going to be canceled. But you can do that with social, and you can do it with search. But search is something that we've had a lot of success with it there, because, as you say, it's kind of hard to plan for it. It's kind of hard to act quickly enough. The nice thing about the data coming in is that it's fairly real time. And if it just triggers a script that sends the ads live, and only then you're not wasting the money when it's not doing you any good. It's only doing, you know, it's only there when you want it to be. Okay. Anyone else? Oh, another one.
Are you also pulling your social data natively, or are you using a tool for that?
Mostly natively, but there are a number of tools that our insights team uses, and we have a long list of all sorts of things. So, you know, typically what we would like to do is we want to understand the client that we're working with as deeply as possible through their own data, but then also put it in that broader picture of what's going on in their industry, their competitors, and that sort of thing. So we're going to look at that as well. Those tools are hit and miss, I would say. You know, some of them are directional. At least they tell you something, you know, and you use them if it confirms your hypothesis, and you don't if they don't. So you want to put it in the larger picture as much as possible. But that data that you can actually have your hands on, that's definitely the best kind. And usually there's enough work to be done based on that, but that'll keep you busy for a while.
We have time for about one more question.
All right.
Especially for, I'll give you a little context, the site that I pull data from is a huge site. It's almost like information overload.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of like, you don't necessarily know where to start.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I could give you two or three tools. I would say that if you have such a big site and there's so much of an overload and you're drinking from the fire hose and all that kind of stuff, typically I think, you know, you just have to focus. You know, you have to focus on what's important. Usually in the data will tell you what, you know, if I can make a 5% difference on 50% of my account or of my visitors, then do it, you know. We've focused on interaction metrics, you know, because people weirdly will do everything right but not care about their site and how people are making it through, and looking at that, you know, where do they fall off? You know, where are they struggling, what's working, what's not working, all that kind of stuff. So I think that, you know, something like Google Analytics gives you some cross sections, you can cross, cross sections of data and sort of figure that out. And usually, what's important will bubble up to the top. I think not getting distracted is probably the best thing to do. And just make sure that, as we love to say, the juice is worth the squeeze. If you can put things in a grid, where things that I can make the biggest impact with the least amount of effort, that's what I would go for. But if you're swimming in data, you just have to kind of ask yourself, what are you trying to achieve? And then that sort of will guide your way. I know that wasn't the answer you're looking for, but that's probably the best I can do. But if I saw your data, I might be able to tell you.
All right, well, let's give it up for Jason.
Thank you.